The national championship game Monday night went down exactly how I expected. Clemson put up a decent fight in the first half, then eventually Joe Burrow took over, LSU's defense clamped down on Trevor Lawrence, and the best team in the country won the national title. It's a nice story for Ed Orgeron and his band of outcasts in Baton Rouge. Joe Burrow's dream school coming out of high school was Nebraska, who didn't want him. His home state school, Ohio State, refused to use him while he was there. LSU's leading running back, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, is undersized by every standard. Top receiver Justin Jefferson was hardly recruited out of high school. The team was led by their lead outcast, Coach Ed Orgeron. He stepped in mid-season after LSU decided to part ways with Les Miles a couple of years ago. It wasn't a popular decision at the time in some circles to give Ed Orgeron a chance by keeping him on. He's the typical stereotype of Louisiana. All you got to do is listen to him speak to realize that. Now, I'm hearing people talk about the beginning of an LSU dynasty. And I'm not just hearing this on social media. Even Sports Illustrated this morning mentioned in a piece that the LSU dynasty seems to be alive again. I've got my doubts. But first, I don't remember the first LSU dynasty. And secondly, I've got my doubts about Ed Orgeron leading a dynasty at LSU. I actually believe that next season, things will return to the status quo, which is a team with a great defense and an unwatchable offense. Sometimes in sports, mainly in college sports, mediocre head coaches catch lightning in a bottle. Gene Chizik found Cam Newton back in 2011, won a national championship. Today, nobody can find the guy. You look at Gene Chizik's record prior to Cam Newton, it's eerily similar to Ed Orgeron's record prior to Joe Burrow. To have a dynasty, you got to have an elite head coach. And I don't think Ed Orgeron is on the level of a Nick Saban, an Urban Meyer, Dabo Sweeney. Elite head coaches win no matter where they're coaching. Nick Saban won at Toledo, Michigan State. Urban Meyer won at Bowling Green, Utah. His 2004 Utah team went undefeated, ranked in the top five at the end of the season. Prior to Joe Burrow, Ed Orgeron's coaching record was 25-31. Joe Brady, who helped Sean Payton develop the Saints' offense the last few years, is mostly responsible for Orgeron's success. One good thing about the college football season being over, we don't have to be subjected to Dabo Sweeney's constant whining. I've been making the point all year, when you go through a full season untested, it's really difficult to respond when you eventually get punched in the mouth. Clemson had a 10-point lead early in this game. There was no panic on the LSU sideline. Joe Burrow remained composed. Credit to Ed Orgeron. He kept his team composed. They had been tested all season. This was their seventh game against a ranked opponent. Once LSU bounced back, built a lead, it was over for Clemson. The offense started stalling. Trevor Lawrence started struggling. He was 2-for-11 on third down, completed less than 50% of his passes for the game. Going into next season, Clemson's going to be the clear number one favorite in preseason polls. And once again, they won't be tested until the playoffs. Along with their weak ACC schedule, they play Akron, the Citadel, and South Carolina. The only potential tough game on their schedule is an early November game at Notre Dame. Now, there were a couple of things about that game last night that I didn't like, besides the performance of Trevor Lawrence. It's going to be interesting to see how he bounces back from failure. He's never tasted defeat at the college level. Never failed in two seasons at Clemson. But as far as what I didn't like about last night's game, for starters, it was too damn long. The game was over 4 hours. The first half was over 2 hours long. I don't understand the stopping the clock after every first down in college football. Just keep the game moving. It doesn't make any sense to stop the clock to move the chains. The NFL seems to be the only league to figure out ideal starting times for their big game. You know, last night's 7:15, 7:30 start time, that was okay. I'm okay with that. They just drug out the presentation and extended what should have been a 3-hour game to 4 hours. But the NBA, they'll start the NBA Finals at 8:30 on a Wednesday night. Game won't end until midnight on the East Coast, 11 o'clock my time. And don't even get me started on Major League Baseball. It's apparent their target audience is old, retired white men because they'll have playoff games at 1:30 on a weekday afternoon on Fox Sports 2 where nobody can find it. The NFL seems to be the only league that realizes that people have work lives and they make it a point to start their big marquee games at a decent hour. Seattle-Green Bay last week was the, quote, late game. It started at 5:30. The Super Bowl usually kicks off about 6 o'clock. I don't know why the NFL is the only league that understands this. I thought the officiating in last night's game between LSU and Clemson was god-awful. It was near NFL level of incompetence. The targeting penalty in the third quarter against Clemson linebacker James Skalski, who's one of the leaders of the defense, was absolutely unacceptable. It wasn't called targeting on the field. They stopped the game to review it. There's no helmet-to-helmet contact, though he did lead with his helmet. But it's not the penalty that I had the problem with. It's the rule. One targeting penalty in college football is an automatic ejection. To disqualify an important player like that in a critical point is just fucking ridiculous. There was a questionable offensive pass interference call that erased the Clemson touchdown, would have cut LSU's lead to 11 points with plenty of time to go in the game. The officiating wasn't the reason that Clemson lost. The poor performance of Trevor Lawrence was the reason for that loss. And he's taking a lot of heat for it this morning. Thought to be one of the more polished passers in college football, Trevor Lawrence has struggled mightily the past two games when he's finally went up against good defenses. 54% completion percentage against Ohio State. And like I said earlier, he was under 50% last night against LSU. He overthrew 13 passes last night. But he can hold his head high, knowing that he can redeem himself next season. While, unfortunately for Joe Burrow, he's headed to the place where careers go to die in Cincinnati. If you're an NFL prospect at quarterback and you're a top draft pick, the last thing you want to see coming out of college is your name on the draft board next to the fucking Bungles. Trevor Lawrence, in my opinion, needs redemption next season, though, because I think his draft stock has dropped a little bit after the past couple of games against stiffer competition. It's tough to gauge how effective these college quarterbacks at big-name programs will be in the NFL. Marcus Mariota was great in college, god-awful in the NFL. You remember Jason White at Oklahoma? I think that guy is selling used cars in a trailer park in Norman, Oklahoma these days. A lot of your great NFL quarterbacks had to elevate their college teams. They weren't surrounded by five-star recruits. They were tested their entire college careers. The past two games is the first time that Trevor Lawrence has really been tested in college football. And even though he won at Ohio State, he didn't look great in the passing game. And then he failed miserably last night against LSU. All right, let's move on to the NFL. I've actually been going back and forth all day on whether or not I should talk about the latest Antonio Brown situation. If there were thoughts about him ever being let back into the NFL for the 2020 season, the chance of that happening is likely gone after this latest incident. Something that is by far the worst thing Antonio Brown has done in this 6-month downward spiral. The Hollywood, Florida police were called to AB's home Monday afternoon because of a domestic dispute between him and one of the mothers of his children. So when the cops arrive, Antonio Brown decides to go on Instagram Live and proceed to berate the mother of his child and the police in front of his kids. And did it on Instagram Live where the entire world could witness him make a complete ass of himself. At this point, it's clear to me that something is seriously wrong with Antonio Brown. If you haven't heard the audio, just go Google it. I think TMZ's got it. It's on Twitter. I don't know if it's drugs, it's alcohol. I don't know if something is going on with him mentally. But his behavior the last 6 months has been far from what anybody would call normal. And his behavior Monday afternoon was downright sad to watch. It was the longest 2.5 minute video that I've ever seen. It felt like it would never end. You see one of his young boys, maybe 2 or 3 years old, standing in the street with the police while Antonio Brown, his father, is yelling at them to get the fuck off my property and then calling them crackers. Now, if this were a white football player or a white celebrity calling a black cop the N-word, then this would be international news. It would be a scandal, but not even going to go down that road. Someone in Antonio Brown's life needs to step in and, number one, get this guy off of social media, but more importantly, get him into some type of long-term program, whether that's a rehab, counseling, a psychiatrist, whatever it takes. But that's easier said than done. The problem in this situation, much like most situations with famous people, is Antonio Brown is likely financially supporting everybody close around him. He's got all the money, so he's got all the power. And the people surrounding him are just yes men and likely care very little at all about his health or well-being. If it's not substance abuse or mental issues that are the cause of this behavior, it's entirely possible that Antonio Brown is addicted to fame. I know a lot of people don't believe this, but fame can be a drug. That rush from going out in front of 75,000 people and millions at home every week on TV and being one of the top receivers in the NFL has been taken away from him. And that's difficult to deal with. Since he's been out of the league, he's done anything he can do to keep his name in the headlines. He's no longer being worshipped as a star receiver, as a pillar in the community. Up until recently, he had a great relationship with the cops in Hollywood, Florida. Funded their 7-on-7 league. They allowed him to use their field to practice and stay in football shape this past fall. The department has now severed all ties with Antonio Brown, even returned his donation. The bottom line, this guy needs help. I hope this is the last time we have to hear anything about him because I've got Antonio Brown fatigue. All right, we are nearing the NFL offseason. Basically, 2 more weeks left in the NFL season, and we'll be waiting 7 long months until we get our football back. And one of the biggest stories this offseason is going to be the status of Dak Prescott in Dallas. All signs right now are pointing to the Cowboys offering him a massive new contract, making him the highest paid player in the history of the franchise. Last summer, it was reported that he wanted over $30 million. Now, it's being reported that that number could likely be closer to $40 million. That kind of money should be reserved for the best of the best in the NFL. Franchise-level quarterbacks. Guys that come in and change the landscape of a team. Quarterbacks that can put the team on their shoulders and carry them to a winning season. Guys like Russell Wilson, who carried the Seahawks all of last season. Drew Brees, who turned the Saints from one of the NFL's historically worst teams into a contender every year. Aaron Rodgers. You know the guys I'm talking about. The guys I'm not talking about are guys like Kirk Cousins, whose contract in Minnesota is an albatross, and Dak Prescott. Going into this past season, my view of Dak Prescott was that he was a mediocre quarterback, mid-tier NFL quarterback. I had him on the same level as guys like Jameis Winston, Andy Dalton, Jared Goff. Guys that are serviceable, but need a lot of help to win games and have success. This season only cemented my opinion of Dak Prescott. Nothing changed. People look at the stats, claim he had the best season of his career. Oh, he threw for nearly 5,000 yards. Who fucking cares? Stats are misleading. The truth is, this was one of the worst seasons of Dak Prescott's career. Majority of the season, the Cowboys were playing from behind. So his stats are inflated. I think Mike McCarthy will come in and help Dak Prescott. But I think the way he's going to help him is by going back to Ezekiel Elliott being the focal point of this offense. It worked for 3 years for the Cowboys until Jason Garrett came in last season, tried to turn them into a passing team, ended up losing his job as a result of it. But if that's the case, and Zeke goes back to being the focal point, is it really worth paying Dak Prescott $40 million a year? History tells us that when you commit that much money to one player, it usually doesn't work out because the team doesn't have the money to pay anyone else. Remember when Aaron Rodgers got that massive extension last summer, or the summer of 2018? Then the Packers had to let go of Jordy Nelson, lost one of his favorite targets. They had to let some other players go too. And the Packers had a terrible season in 2018 because of it. The same thing happened several years ago with Drew Brees in New Orleans. He hit the cap hard with what they were paying him. Saints go 7-9 three straight years. Drew Brees realizes that, takes less money. Saints have three straight NFC South titles. Tom Brady has been well known to take hometown discounts so the Patriots could pay other players around him. Now, the difference between Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, Tom Brady, and a guy like Dak Prescott is the other three are proven winners. They've all won Super Bowls. Aaron Rodgers has the ability to lift this Packers team to an NFC Championship game with one good receiver and a rookie running back who's having a breakout season. Do you think Dak Prescott can do the same thing with this Packers team? No. Stephen Jones has called Prescott a top caliber quarterback. Mike McCarthy said there's no doubt Dak Prescott is a Super Bowl caliber quarterback. They're going to pay him and then look back in a year or two and realize what a mistake they made. All right, that's all for today. I'll be back Friday morning to preview the McGregor-Cerrone fight this weekend. Hit the like and subscribe button on YouTube. Leave a 5-star rating on iTunes. Leave me a comment in the section below. You can follow me on Twitter at KC_BTL84. Have a good week, and I will see you guys on Friday.